This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.
Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Simon Tutton. The aim of these podcasts, for those who haven't listened and for those who have listened but have forgotten, is to bring investments to life and explore the world of venture capital in a bit more depth, give you an insight into what we also do at Deepbridge Capital. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Martin Noble, the founder and CEO at Hurricane Modular Commerce, a portfolio company within the technology growth EIS. I find this company particularly fascinating. It's an insight into something which most of us don't really think about. We understand how to buy things over the internet, but we don't really understand how that happens, what the infrastructure or the pipe work that exists behind that to make it happen. So Martin will give us a bit about his background and hopefully the company as well. So Martin, over to you. What was the background to setting up Hurricane?
Well, firstly, Simon, thank you very much for inviting me on here. Always a pleasure to support Deepbridge.
Thank you.
So I suppose the background to setting up Hurricane, it's a really interesting story because it actually goes back 35 years. Mm. Myself and my business partner, a good friend, one of the best friends actually, we started our white collar career. My actual origins are on the factory floor. I was a fitter and turner, but the white collar career, we were both joined the TNT group.
Okay.
So TNT group has been around many years. And as we went through and we climbed that corporate ladder and both ended up as directors eventually at DHL, we'd always promised ourselves we'd go into business with each other. But I think back in that sort of like period of the early 90s or late 90s, there was a couple of films about with Tom Cruise in. I think one was called Cocktail and Dreams. And I think the business was supposed to be this sort of like Indian Ocean Island barbecue-esque sort of like cocktail bar, but it actually ended up being Hurricane. And okay. To accelerate that sort of like story forward, it was very much we'd left corporate life. I'd moved into venture capital, private equity turnaround, where investments hadn't gone too well. I then opened my own what we now call e-commerce and content. But we didn't know that at the time. Owned a business in 2007, where we were providing white labeled services to artists, going from sort of like Foo Fighters to Paul McCartney to Adele when she was breaking, okay. So on and so forth. And we used to sort of like sell over the internet, over social media. And we used to sell tickets, venue concessions, merchandise, that type of thing. So that was early days e-commerce, and particularly through social media, we were the first company that ever did a store within Facebook when Facebook didn't know what it was doing. It was just a connectivity type of platform. Really clunky purchasing experience, but it worked. Mm-hmm. I exited that business in 2012, most of your audience know some of that story and why I did that. I lost my wife to cancer, had two young sons, so I had to reinvent myself. So I opened a couple of consultancy businesses. And at the same time, David's life was sort of like from a business point of view, in parallel. He'd done a business that was helping people in cross-border e-commerce, trying to make that easier and getting towards how you've introduced us around, what's the pipe work underneath the ground. You know, we often shop domestically or internationally, and we just expect things to happen. But what's the detail of that infrastructure underneath that not everybody sees? So we were literally, my son had just finished his A-levels. He'd gone on holiday with his group of 18-year-old friends. Mm-hmm. I was picking him up from the airport and David gave me a call. And he said, how do you fancy doing that? And I said, well, that's a basket case of a business. Why do we want to do that? Have a think about this, this, and this. And that was really the sort of like formulation of Hurricane. And we thought we'd get into the market by procuring a platform of what we now know as these sort of like shipping manager aggregators. So you go onto these sort of like shipping manager platforms and they give you the best rates from DPD or DHL or Federal Express or whatever. Anyway, we were gazumped. Mm-hmm. I offered a certain price and the other acquirer offered what I thought the business was worth. We were gazumped. So we lost that deal. And then we tried another one and that got gazumped as well, funny enough, by the same party. And right. That party are now one of Hurricane's biggest customers, which is quite an interesting turn pretty much 6-7 years on.
And quite satisfying, I assume.
Yeah, so we formulated the business in 2016 and the auspices of that business was e-commerce is growing. The fastest growth segment of B2C e-commerce was cross-border. And now that business in volume terms is probably about 180 billion shipments per year. Gross merchandise value, about $1.2 trillion. And at the same side of that growth, it was a double-edged sword. So with the geopolitical environment, there would be more regulation coming in, more local fiscal policy, more compliance, increased fines, so on and so forth. So we created this thing, which is basically utilizes artificial intelligence. We classify product ready for cross-border, i.e. through customs authorities, transfer. And we look at prohibited and restricted goods. We look at trade embargoed goods. We look at free trade agreements. And we look at compliance. And we do all that in ultra quick time. Mm-hmm. So our technology is ultimately scalable. Mm-hmm. The way that we've built our systems is normally, if you were to select old school, if you were to classify a product for customs throughput, it would take someone with a lot of skill with a semi-automated classification lookup encyclopedia catalog in front of them. It would take them about sort of like 15 minutes. Okay. Our system, our content and our AI application can literally do that in 128 milliseconds.
Wow. Okay. And give us a little insight into what the consequences of getting those kind of things wrong.
Well, I think, you know, that a lot of people look at customs authorities as these dusty, old, bureaucratic, lack of asset investment organizations. They're actually not. You know, the politicians set the policy. And it's the frontline authorities as part of those governments that have to sort of enact that, Simon. Okay. And they are catching up. So with the whole boom of e-commerce, with that real headwind, you know, so like 10 years of change in 1 year through the pandemic, main pandemic year of 2020, they've had to catch up as well. Mm-hmm. So digitization is key. Mm-hmm. Digital data is key. They're not paperwork processes anymore. Mm-hmm. So everything is about the data. And that data has to be complete and accurate because it's driving fiscal policy. Like we've had the VAT changes in Europe on the 1st of July last year. So every good that comes into the EU, no matter what its value, you pay VAT on it. That has to be calculated at scale, at pace, and at accuracy. You get that wrong, your shipment will be held. The fines will be issued. So that's just on a fiscal side of product classification, duty and tax.
Okay.
Then you've got outside of that regulation. So you and I are sat in New York. We manufacture leather belts. Mm-hmm. But the origin material of that leather is, say, Brazil. Mm-hmm. So if we have a customer, Simon, we're in New York and we're shipping to Australia, mm-hmm. That is an embargo product because the Australian government want to protect its kangaroo leather industry. Okay. So there's various quotas. Mm-hmm. So thereby you would need special certification. If you don't have that certification for that leather belt going from New York to Australia, then again, that shipment can be held. So in a B-commerce world, the whole consumer experience is massive. We now all expect to go onto an Amazon, an eBay, a website, whatever, and we expect that delivery experience from, particularly if you're in tight and dense population areas such as inner cities, we expect to be offered same day delivery. Mm. We expect 2 hour turnaround. Yeah. And if you look at the growth of those food, what I call the food marketplaces, so your Deliveroos and that, you know, we expect the list for the local town, and I live rurally, so we expect the list and we want it delivered within 45 minutes, an hour, so on and so forth. So when you then move to international, I'm not saying move warm food internationally. I highly recommend you don't do that. It'd be a bit rotten by the time you got it. But if you're moving good, our expectation as consumers is we want 2 day, next day, 3 day, 4 day, five day deliveries. So if your data is incorrect, not only in that sort of like physical shipment flow, but the data that accompanies that, you're okay. going to encounter delays, additional costs of storage at airport, additional fees to basically correct that data and then re-clear it through customs. And then there's the whole fiscal chain of payments, either to duty collection agencies or indirect collection agencies in VAT or GST, as they call it in the States, and you get that wrong. Then on top of that, there's all the regulations that are around that, which can, there was recently a case of a carrier in Australia.
Okay.
They were fined by the American authorities for shipping product not only to denied companies, but denied countries as well. And the fine was $8.6 million. Now that was mitigated down from $816 million because they went to the authorities and said, yeah. I'm sorry, we've discovered we've done this. Mm-hmm. So it was actually mitigated down. And wow. Anybody that's in that carrier marketplace, e-commerce platform, mm-hmm. Can be fined. Mm-hmm. And don't really care what size of organization your turnover and your profitability are. If you can take an 8.6 million hit on your P&L, you're doing really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the consequence of getting the data wrong.
Okay. No, that's some pretty big consequences.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the opportunities for you, where do you see the opportunities for Hurricane?
Well, I mean, Hurricane, I think one of the things that we have done really well. We're still a relatively young company. We only incepted in 2016. We've been through some pretty trial and tribulation years in that sort of like cross-border data. Very much our home turf, Simon, was whilst we're a technology company, we're high-depth content data company. We have 251 years of experience in cross-border logistics. So our first place to take our proposition was very much our home turf, which was carriers, postal authorities, because that's where most of the founders emanated from. So we've got some really good relationships in that sector. But what I want to do with now is actually move it up towards that transactional piece. So I want to move into marketplaces. I want deeper penetration into global e-commerce or regional e-commerce platforms. We are open in China, but I think the pandemic really hit us in China. We got some really good accounts and customers from China, but because of local lockdown and the business culture that you have in China, we just can't do that face-to-face facet. So I'm really sort of like leaving that as it is, but really piling a lot of investment into the Asia Pacific region, because just intra Asia Pacific, you've got 25% of that 1.2 trillion US dollar market just intra Asia Pacific. Okay. So I'm building out big there. And whilst we were very much the trailblazers back in 2016, 2017, you've got a few semi-competitors mainly coming out of North America. So coming from a sports background, as you know, Simon, I want to play away from home as well. So I want to go and take the Americans on their home turf as well. So that's really, there's a sectoral opportunity that I want to do, as well as a global regional perspective as well.
Okay, brilliant. And I mean, you mentioned COVID there, which I think is interesting from a number of perspectives. We get asked a lot of the time by advisors and investors what was the impact of COVID on our portfolio companies. And obviously, that is a hurdle in itself for any company, just in terms of can people come into the office or whatever. But particularly for an e-commerce, there must have been some real lows and some real highs. And so can you give us a bit of a flavor of what those were like, but also how you see what was the last 12 months like, which wasn't the peak, and what is the next 12 months likely to be like?
Well, I mean, so like I could talk on this for probably about 4 hours, but I think in a real sort of crisp nutshell. So the pandemic put Hurricane back about 2 years. We'd engaged in a lot of enterprise customers. We had those customer contracts signed at the back end of 2019. And I distinctly remember, you know, one of those customers is Seiko Logistics. And I distinctly remember being in their offices early 2020 and talking to their directors. And they were saying, we've had some factories and customers close in China, but they're all coming back to work. It's fine. There's this thing called COVID. And we were looking at it. And that was in the February. And then all of a sudden, it just exploded. And a lot of those customers that we had were all integrating, but then they faced their own challenges of, you know, safe workplaces. You know, we highlight a lot of the public sector workers, particularly in healthcare and health provision, for their efforts through the pandemic. But, you know, a lot of the delivery companies kept wheels moving. You know, from in the UK, if you want to go locally, DPD and Royal Mail and the rest of them, they kept that thing going. But, you know, little old Hurricane doing its data, we were sort of like number three or four on the technology roadmap, and then we dropped to about number 20. So it took the wind out of our sails. I think the second element was on our capitalization. We just agreed our sort of third round with Deepbridge, and if everyone remembers back to that point when we hit the mark, the the March of 2020, the capital, the funding markets all around the globe were up and down and up and down and up and down, and provided some real sort of like instability. So that provided some real worry. But so like coming through the back end of that, you know, one of the real, I suppose, winners, for want of a term, was the B2C e-commerce market. Mm-hmm. And as our consumer behavior in that B2C e-commerce style of transaction, we endured, I think I said it earlier, you know, 10 years of behavioral change in 1 year. That switch from online mechanism, online mode of transaction and buying, away from bricks and mortar. So you had this real high uplift. But that was domestically, Simon. That was within country boundaries, because internationally, that's much more difficult. And all of those carriers that were operating internationally, they had around about 60% of their global capacity taken away, because a lot of them used to load their cargo into the passenger bellies of aircraft. And if you remember, all the airlines were grounded, flights were coming out, dropped, like, so, you know, in that huge 180 billion shipments globally, you take 60% capacity away from a network, there's going to be problems.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are rebuilding that still. So, you know, so like cross-border, where are we now? You know, cross-border e-commerce is still growing 30 to 65% year on year, depending upon what trade lane you're looking at. Mm-hmm. However, you still have the pandemic effect in China. And, you know, we've got customers that we're seeing a 60% downturn in their profile and their traffic, China outbound. You know, I've got friends in Shanghai, and, you know, they've been locked down for weeks. You know, there's 22 million people locked down still in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. And there's only 7% of the commercial production factories actually working, Simon. So there's still that impact going on in the globe. Now, you know, talking to the CEO of DHL and or DHL Express, DPD, and a lot of our customers, they're still expecting, those orders are still going through, but they're not being fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And you've only got to look at the shipping backlog in deep sea freight, and, you know, those thermal images that you see around Hong Kong of all of these ships outside and parked up and waiting to be offloaded to go into that sort of like manufacturing cycle. So it will come back. So I don't think we're through the woods at all. I think it's a very unstable environment. And then you multiply that up again through the Ukrainian crisis. Mm-hmm. And then you multiply that again. You know, most countries are heading for an increase in inflation, particularly in the Western world. Mm-hmm. And how their monetary authorities are going to, or monetary governments, how they're going to handle that, so on and so forth. So, you know, my wish for the next 12 to 36 months is, come on, give us a chance on stability. Please, world, give us a chance on some form of stability. But, you know, I think digitization has accelerated stuff. So on one hand, that's a great upside for Hurricane. I think a downside for business, it accelerates peaks and troughs. You know, in a time window that many years ago used to be, you know, so like 24 months, now is almost 2 weeks.
So what do you focus on when you've got the four horsemen of the apocalypse bearing down on you? And I think we pretty much have got all of those at the moment. How does a relatively small business like Hurricane not only go through, navigate that and survive, but actually grow?
Yeah. Well, I suppose bringing that back to a sporting metaphor, when I was playing at Worcester and you used to go down to Gloucester Rugby Club, and you had some fairly big, ugly mean forwards chasing you down in the midfield. Yeah. You stick to the plan. Use your left foot, use your right foot, use your left hand and use the right foot, and you make sure you damn well run quicker than the rest of them. Yeah. And that's what we've got to do. We keep innovating. You know, our year-on-year growth is now 642% year-on-year. We're still gaining contracts. We're still penetrating those existing contracts. We're bringing out new product. We keep in our space and on our track. We stick to the plan, which is best in class data, most up to date data, fastest delivery data, best integration. And best customer-centric and customer service, and massive investment in lifelong learning in our people. Through the pandemic, you know, you hear a lot about the great resignation. You know, since the inception of Hurricane, our employee turnover is 0.7%. So 0.7%.
Wow.
And we do that by keeping our employees agile. We do a lot of cross-functional work. We do a lot of cross-functional development. And I know people will leave. People will leave. But what we guarantee with Hurricane, if someone joins us, we guarantee that lifelong learning, not only for maybe a future career with Hurricane, but outside of Hurricane as well. So, you know, our people and our environment are key to that. And, you know, the last point in that is Hurricane's always been a virtual company.
Okay.
So we were doing virtual before virtual became a thing. And that's mainly because we got a Yorkshire CFO and he couldn't really see any value in buying property. And he was tight as a duck's backside. But in that sense, we would do it. We were prepared in a way, nothing planned. It was just we didn't want the cost of offices on our profit loss at the time. We felt there was more a better spend elsewhere. So we've learned that, but you know, you have to adapt your leadership style and you have to adapt your culture to fit. So those moments of when we do get people together and we do get those people a little bit more regularly now than we did through 2020 and 2021. And what you do in that has to be really thought through and accelerated, and you think through from an individual point of view, a team point of view, a tech team point of view, a content team point of view, a business development team point of view, an account management team point of view. So there's a lot more work that goes into, you know, what's actually do we want to get out of these people being together. So yeah, we're still learning as we go along on that one, Simon.
Yeah, no, fantastic. So just before I move on to the very final questions on a more personal level, obviously we as investors and investors that come in with us, we're looking for growth stories and we're looking for exits at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Not focusing on the actual timescales, whatever that might be for Hurricane or the numbers you want to hit before you look towards the exit or whatever.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the moment, with the fourth horseman, there's the fifth horseman who is, you know, the tech market and tech stocks are crashing around our ears and valuations are plummeting. How would you see that affecting valuations of smaller growth companies when it comes to sale?
I think, you know, you can very much look at, you know, if I go back to that story of what happened through the pandemic, and I think, you know, you can split the market up quite a bit into, you know, sort of like tech stocks and life sciences, traditional blue chip companies, so on and so forth. And they all had their story to tell. The one thing I would say about Hurricane is our values actually increased. Why has that increased? Because to go back to how you started this podcast, you know, we're a small little piece And there's stuff in that pipe work underneath the ground. But the importance of that pipe work, both from a scale, technology, efficiency, governmental transaction, fiscal transaction point of view, is becoming more and more important for this B2C e-commerce global world. And without it, it will fail. So our valuation has gone up and up and up through time. And, you know, that's exemplified by certain companies in similar spheres to us and the valuations that they've attracted, some of which have been sort of like 21, 22 times multiple of revenue. Some of which have accelerated values from about 10 million of a company up to about 90 million on pretty much non-tractionable revenue stages. So whilst generically you can look at tech stocks, you've got to look at the detail underneath, and there's still those little nuggets, particularly in cross-border, particularly in data, particularly in data enhancement, particularly where it's to do with a high growth type of industry. And I think, you know, again, through the pandemic, you saw some really crazy valuations in tech. One of our non-exec directors, he is part of a company that was in these like disposable battery type scooter organizations out of Canada. And you know, without a single they hadn't even got past prototype stage, and their valuation went up to just shy of 900 million. It was crazy. Unproven, no traction, so on and so forth. So I think, you know, we're just living through some of that, you know, from a finance market point of view, we're just living through some of that, some interesting decision making, and I'm being polite. So interesting decision making through 2020 and 2021. So, you know, but from my selfish perspective and Hurricane's perspective, you know, we're just there underneath the waterline, carrying up, carrying on. And you know, the evidence is in our particular tight space, values are still increasing.
Yeah, no, I think, thank you for that. I think that reinforces DeepBridge's investment philosophy in general, which is to invest into real things that do something useful.
Yeah. And I, you know, I also think, Simon, you know, it's, you know, we are a global application. And we do it in every language around the world. We do it in split currencies, multi-currencies, singular currencies all around the world. Our AI can take Mandarin, it can take Portuguese, it can take English. So whilst we've got a wee bit of a downturn at the moment in China, we can flip that to North America. We can flip that to South America. South America is a huge growth market, B2C e-commerce. That's one of the sort of like 63-64% growth areas. Intra Asia Pacific is again a growth area. And you know, I think, I always think that's key to the DeepBridge I suppose selection criteria of investee companies. It's around scale, growth opportunities, and also risk mitigation. If that market starts to get a little bit wobbly, can it be applied over here, whether geographically or sectoral or whatever?
Yeah, 100%. Brilliant. Well, I think that's given us a really good flavour of Hurricane and the e-commerce market and how smaller tech companies grow. But personally, what are your interests away from the office?
Well, first and foremost, family. Two older boys, one in Hong Kong and one about to go to Sydney. Both semi pro rugby players, but they've got a backdrop. Two stepdaughters. One is training to be a teacher, and the other one's a very fiery redhead at the age of 13. that takes up most of my managerial time in helping her out, so on and so forth. Outside of that, I've actually got back on the rugby pitch. I hung my top level boots up many years ago, then went into coaching, but I didn't hang my coaching boots up. I just put them in the cupboard. But I've got myself back on. I'm playing again. Touch rugby.
Brave idea.
Touch rugby, not too physical. So I do a lot of shouting from the back, and my favourite distance is probably about 1 metre nowadays. So I do a lot of that. My other passion is classic cars. My downtime is pretty much slinging a spanner. I've got several projects on the go. One of which is putting a Chevy race engine into an old 72 Jensen Interceptor. I've got an E-Type Jag, I've got a Triumph TR6, and then once I exit Hurricane, I've got this Tesla engine that I want to put into an old Volkswagen Common Gear.
I thought you were going to say something like a Lotus 7 or a
it's sort of like, yeah, because that'd be quite interesting. So that's that. And then, you know, last but by no means least, you know, I mentioned earlier on, you know, I sort of like experienced heavy trauma 10 years ago. And I counsel young fathers with young children who have lost their partner or their wife. I should do more of that, try and do sort of like two or three of those a month, so do that as well. So, you know, outside of Hurricane, whilst Hurricane is a truly global business, I can find my days starting in China and ending in the West Coast.
I was going to say you've got some full-time traveling
around. I do try and fit in, because it's important to have different variant and something else. And I also think it's really important to be involved in, you know, something completely different, something, you know, with a team aspect to it, a sport aspect to it. You work in your body, and then on some other things you work in your mind, but on a different thing, not on the business. It's working something else, and then you're putting some stuff back. And, you know, if I can help in any way of making people's lives better or more durable, then I will.
You're amazing. So obviously the key to everybody's happy life is having a Deep Bridge dinner party. And this is a question that we ask all guests on the podcast. If you could invite three people to join you for dinner, dead or alive, excluding friends and family, so as not to offend anyone, who would they be, and why would you invite them?
Yeah, good interview question. I've used that one on interviews for about the last 10 years now. Gives you a good insight to people. So I haven't changed this actually in number of years. So my three guests would be Dave Grohl.
Amazing.
Bob Marley.
Okay.
And Muhammad Ali.
Okay. So tell us why.
Two music, one sport. Mm-hmm. And I think all of them have got a wicked sense of humor in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. They were all pretty grounded individuals, some more than others. They've all gone through, you know, sort of like high periods of adversity, whether that be sort of like political, their career, trauma, gunshot wounds, so on and so forth. But they've kept coming back.
Yeah.
And they've kept coming back, and they've done something. And I find, you know, them all very interesting characters. And, you know, I just love to have the three of them there, sort of like interacting with each other, with me throwing a few sort of like questions. And, you know, I've got to declare, I have actually had dinner with one of them.
Okay. So anyone who's listening, please write in with your answers on a postcard and guess, and Martin will send you a bottle of champagne if you get it right.
Paid for by Ian Warwick.
Paid for by Ian Warwick. It'll only be the best. Amazing. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time today, Martin. It's always a pleasure, but it's I think it's a really fascinating company. And I think the journey of Hurricane has been fascinating, if you know, slightly emotional at times, but isn't that a growth company story? But yeah, thank you for your time today. To our audience today, thank you for joining us. If anybody's got any topics that you'd like us to cover in future Deep Bridge Discovery podcasts, you can see the depth of knowledge that's available to you. Then please email us at discovery@deepbridgecapital.com. Thank you very much, and I look forward to speaking to the next guest and seeing people on future podcasts.
This podcast was brought to you by Deep Bridge Capital LLP. Deep Bridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.